The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Okay, time now to join our panel. We've got Louisa Meehan from Woodview HRM, HR and Dispute Resolution Expert. And we've got Paul Hayes, CEO of Beach Hut PR. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Lots in the papers before we get to that. Well, of course, on the front of all the papers, we're getting pictures of the opening ceremony last night. I just spoke about it in depth with Ger, but briefly, did you watch it yourselves?
Yes, I sat and I watched all of it from start to finish. Mixed, I would say, would be the best I could put with it. Elements that you were like, come on, would you speed up and put a bit of speed in those speedboats? I think the second half of it, once they got to the Eiffel Tower, was better and it was more structured. They were very unfortunate with the rain. The highlight for me was certainly seeing Celine Dion. I'm a massive Celine Dion fan, and to see her after her illness be there and be so magnificent singing from the Eiffel Tower was spectacular.
Yeah, because I guess we've had an intimate look into Celine's life with that documentary.
Yeah.
And you realise just how much it would have taken to get her up there.
Huge.
And to get her singing and what it would mean to have her voice back.
Yeah, and you could see it. I mean, you could just see it in her eyes. She's a very emotional and expressive person. You could see how much it meant to her to be there. So that was my highlight. But I'll tell you, there was a few moments, many, many times before that, going, I have to get up in the morning, I just want to go to bed. When is this going to be over?
Paul, were you a fan of it?
I again, like Louisa, a game of two halves. I thought the boat thing was great for every country when they come on, but I couldn't be waiting for all of them. They should have put water cannon on the boat or something. Shane Lowry would have done well on that.
And then the rest of it, in fairness.
Yeah. The rest of it was like just so wonderfully French. It was like the Sanka set affair come to life. I was like, what the hell has this got to do with the Olympics? What's going on? Yeah. I recently saw Chariots of Fire at a charity thing for David Putnam, which was the Paris Olympics 100 years ago. And the contrast between, you know, the dour Scottish Presbyterianism of that and whatever it was that it was last night.
I mean, yeah.
The one thing that was unfortunate was, like, my two kids were watching it with me. One turned 11 yesterday, one's turning 14 next week, and it lost them. Like, they were really excited to be watching it, and we were doing it as a family, and they got a little bit into it and they were like, what is this? I'm out of here. And they just escaped back to the Xbox.
Yeah, well, four hours is a lot to ask, particularly on an 11-year-old.
Having said that, the reinterpretation of La Marseillaise from the top of the glass house, as I was calling it, was an electrifying moment for me. I thought that was amazing to hear. Great old anthem anyway, and they gave it a good run for the sorority, for the sisterhood.
And hats off to the chap who managed to play a grand piano that was absolutely covered in rain that was bucketed down. Let's look at some of the papers, because on the front of the Indo today, we're talking about five areas to watch as the government looks to win your vote in the budget. So this is the classic, please don't vote us out, we'll give you loads of prezzies. What do you think, Louisa? Look, what are these five things? What are the five carrots they're giving us?
Well, there's four carrots and a stick.
Okay.
So the stick, I don't think, will concern too many people. We'll start with that. They're potentially looking at increasing the bank levy to help cover the cost of some of the social welfare bonuses that are coming on, which is, you know, I think people will survive that. With the income tax, the first one that they have there, what they're looking at doing is widening the bands, but keeping the 20 and 40% rates there. For people who are on the higher band, you're looking at potentially €600 worth of savings a year. So not bad. For the USC, which was a temporary tax 15 years ago, which we still seem to have, they're looking at, again, dropping that for the second time in a row, which would be a great thing and, again, benefit pretty much everybody. Inheritance tax, I've always had an issue with inheritance tax because you've already paid tax on it.
Yeah.
What I didn't realise, because it probably didn't occur to me 15 years ago to worry about it, is that 15 years ago you could inherit €542,544 and then anything above that you only pay 22% tax on. Today you can only inherit €335,000 and anything above that you're paying 35% tax on it, which is quite punitive. And I think Simon Harris himself has come out and said that it's too punitive. So they're looking at changing that inheritance tax bracket. And for particularly for people who, their parents may not have a lot, but if they have a house and the house happens to be in an area, perhaps in Dublin or in any of the cities, you know, you're very quickly heading into that tax bracket. And then the other one, which is obviously very, very important, is they're looking at social welfare increases. So there's been €12 across most of the social welfare platforms over an increase already in 2024, and they're looking at potentially another €10, which doesn't sound like a lot to the individual receiving it, but is a lot to the exchequer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess none of this is particularly unpredictable, really, is it?
No.
I mean, they're trying to soften us up a little bit with some perks. But I do agree with you with the inheritance tax. It just seems like the most cruel because,
yeah,
you know, people have paid all their lives, they paid the tax. It's, yeah, already, so it's a double taxation.
It's a double taxation.
And it really affects those people. You know, it's hard enough when you're dealing with an estate, you know, something I've done recently in my family.
It's really hard.
You know, and you have all those emotions swirling, yeah, around, and then the vultures are coming in for more taxation, look, and stuff that's already had tax paid on it.
It is. Like, my parents are in their 60s. They're not mega wealthy. They live in Leitrim, but there isn't nothing. And me and my sister have said to them, we're like, you know, you need to be talking to your accountant. You need to talk to a solicitor. There's no point in handing the government 40% of everything you've earned. We don't mind. Go spend it. Go on holidays. Go do whatever you want. But don't pay 40% tax on it after you've already spent a huge amount of money on tax for your whole lives. Mm. Don't do that.
Paul, the US election is obviously... actually, before I move on to that, there is a story. There is a story in terms of... It's on the front of the Indo today. That's the one I should have said. But it's where the welfare budget coffers have been raided for the RTE bailout. And people aren't happy about this. People aren't happy about the RTE bailout in general anyway. But that's making some coverage today.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by the Indo and RTE seem to be in a perpetual state of war with each, yeah, other. They've decided to be the two contenders. Nobody's happy with it, but, you know, RTE are going to go through some fairly big structural changes over the next 5 years because the bailout, big and all as it is and the way they presented it, it's not enough. So I think we're going to see a halving of RTE over 5 years and a much tighter regime there. I think we're also bolted on, just to go back to the for a November election. I think it is a big giveaway budget, and then it's almost certainly November, because I think Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil's tails are wagging and back up since the locals and Europeans, and so they just feel more confident about it, and the longer it goes on, maybe something goes wrong. So I think that's the current feeling anyway, that we're going to have one. But yeah, where general taxation comes from, I suppose it was an interesting debate on, you know, does it come from general, or is it specifically there? So now this hybrid, part license, part from social welfare, part from, I think it probably just needs a bit more clarity. So it's not the end of the RTE saga, but it seems like the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Let's move to America, because Kamala has finally got the blessing of the Obamas. You can almost hear the choirs as he decides to come down from on high and allow everybody to kiss the Democratic ring. I guess Kamala has gone through a fairly major growth in the last week or so. She went from being sort of, oh God, anyone but Kamala, to now being embraced by the TikTok generation and having a complete rebrand. She's now going to enjoy a whole brat summer. And I guess people seem to be weighing in behind her because I guess it's got to be better than Sleepy Joe when she has injected a bit of life into the whole, Democratic side of the election.
Yeah, I'm really struck by the Irish Times piece, someone in Ballymoney, County Antrim, saying if she has connections here, we'll celebrate. I don't think she'll be celebrating. I don't think we're going to see a Kamala Plaza at any stage, because it looked like a slave trader was involved here at some stage. So, a Circle Kamala or a Kamala Plaza is certainly not in the future for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it has, I guess, you know, the Republicans and Trump would be a lot happier to be going up against Joe. He's not in the race anymore. The Democrats, I guess, kept his condition. They tried to keep it under wraps for as long as they could, but the public debate made it exactly that. It was public that he mentally was in cognitive decline and they couldn't hide that anymore. So the upshot of that is now that they have a much stronger contender now, and they're going to have to rethink things.
Look, I think Kamala Harris is the best option they have. I think it's unfortunate for her or for anybody that they've left it so long, because it's going to be extremely hard to actually win at this point, the way that US politics work. But they do have the Obama blessing, and that blessing is freely available on social media for anybody who'd like to listen to it. It was quite, you know, just happenpence that somebody happened to be recording Kamala as she received the phone call. It wasn't at all choreographed, but it's there. And it's a really nice phone call, and they're positive. They're talking about how proud they are of her, how historic it is. And one of the things that I liked that she said is that, you know, she obviously talks about the journey ahead and the fight, but she wants it to be fun and to enjoy it. And we see that coming across in how she's engaging with the younger population and the pop culture in the US. And I think that's going to be really, really important.
Well, a lot of them have been left out of the conversation for so long.
They've been left out of the conversation. Now, there's a great, I don't know if you've seen the cartoon in the Indo, but I had to take a photo of it. There's a picture of Camilla and Donald, with Donald pointing a finger at her, him saying, she has no kids, just saying, because there's this rhetoric at the minute about how can a woman who doesn't have children represent families? It's completely unacceptable. Her retort, again, in the caricature is, just imagine what they'd say if I had five children by three different partners. So I do think it's interesting that Donald Trump, who is an old man, really, is going up against a young, vibrant woman who has a phenomenal education, an extraordinary political background. Whether she's good or bad is yet to be proven. And he seems to be running for the hills and throwing stones.
I actually met Kamala Harris. Sorry, mind your toes, I'm name dropping now. but it was about 25 years ago in San Francisco in a bar at 4 a.m. And I was so glad she was there with her then boyfriend, downtown Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco, because we needed to talk our way out of a particular situation. And yeah, she drank me under a table. So I'm a huge fan. I think as well that
all she had to do was buy a round of drinks.
I easily bought. But they, you know, she is new. She's vibrant. But there's 100 days. They're going to throw everything at her.
Yeah.
She needs to pick the whitest white man in the history of whiteness as her vice president.
Yeah.
You know, just to reassure people that might be central or wobbling. And I think J.D. Vance seems to have gone down like a fart in a spacesuit. So yeah. it's hers to lose, is what it seems like. But 100 days to the election is a long way to go.
Yeah, in fairness, 100 hours in American politics seems to be a long way to go.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. Homeless numbers have reached record levels, 14,300 in the Examiner today. And that's a shocker, isn't it?
You know, it's just really sad. And I think what's saddest about it is that it's increasing. So since May, it's increased by 144. Since December, by 1,000. In a year, 1,700. And of those 14,303 people, 4,404 of them are children. But that does not include, because when you sort of see homelessness, I still think the same as my kids do. It's the person lying on the street. Actually, these numbers don't include rough sleepers. These numbers also don't include the 2,400 homeless asylum seekers. So if you were to add all of that together, you know, we're talking at over 17, maybe 18,000 people throughout the country, the majority of which are in Dublin. And it is sad. I think it's, you know, it's too simple to say just put a plan in place, because any plan that you put in place has an enormous cost. And the numbers are increasing all the time. So it needs to be a long-term strategic element. I've worked with some of the sort of charities who develop property for people who want, not necessarily homeless people, but they would have some homeless people going into them. And they work incredibly hard and they're opening new houses all the time. So I think it's a crisis. I don't know what the solution is.
I guess what's difficult for a lot of people, I think, to grasp, and it's a difficult conversation to have because it's quite an emotive one. We see, if it's for people outside of the state, it's an all hands on deck. We have to sort this reaction. And what people don't understand, without having any negative feelings towards people coming in from outside, that they just don't understand the mechanics of it, that why we can't inject the same urgency into looking after people from our own state who are visibly on the street in front of us. And I guess that's something that, it's a difficult conversation to have, because people are very quick to jump in with labels but it's one of those areas that there's complex reasons behind it, but I guess that's one of the sources of confusion for a lot of people.
But I think that's part of the point here. And this is exactly what I was trying to say at the beginning. When I hear homeless, I'm thinking of the person on the street. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is people who do have a roof over their head. They are warm. They are dry. They do have a bed to sleep in, but they're not in a home. So the people coming in, the asylum seekers, the people in the tents, that's, you know, these people are probably living in better standard accommodation to that, but they don't have a home.
Yeah, they're economically precarious. And that's the problem with homelessness. It's too broad a concept, because it's about three or four different things. At the high end of the high dependency end, you know, of homelessness on the streets, you don't need just a bed. You need psychiatric services. You need wraparound services. It's 150 grand a year type service to help those people. And bundling it all in, it shouldn't be beyond our ken. We are a rich, rich country. So it doesn't seem to be a money issue. It's a, I have no solution to it, but it is a series of different conflated issues under the rubric of homelessness.
There's a lot of hand-wringing, isn't there? It's just a problem that's bigger than us. And I guess we would love to see some of that urgency injected into it. We'll have to leave it there for our review of the papers. Louisa Meehan, Woodview HRM, HR and Dispute Resolution Expert, and Paul Hayes, CEO of Beechhut PR. Thanks so much for dropping into us.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.